Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. Through the efforts of ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta is working hard to become a leader in wireless technology. And researchers like Dr. Jim Haslett and Dr. Carrie Williamson at the University of Calgary are making breakthroughs on fronts as far removed as cell phones and signals from outer space. And the University of Lethbridge is expanding its world-class remote sensing program with the addition of renowned scientist Dr. Phil Taye. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. The ever-present cell phone is probably the most obvious example of wireless technology. You no longer have to be plugged in to talk on the phone or even browse the internet. And one of the scientists who helped cut you free is Dr. Jim Haslett. Jim is a professor at the University of Calgary, where he holds a research chair with a name as long as your old phone cord. It is the TR Labs ICOR NSERC Senior Industrial Research Chair in Wireless Radio Integrated Circuit Design. And Jim is working on what's called next generation wireless technology.
Next generation was something that was really pushed strongly about 5 years ago. People were visualizing, we were in something called second generation, and then there was going to be third and fourth generation capability developing very quickly. As it turned out, with the industry downturn that happened 3-4 years ago, that was delayed, and it's only now that people are starting to look at that next generation stuff. But basically what it is much more capability in things like your cell phones, combining personal digital assistants and email and text messaging and video processing with your phone system. So that's what the next generation stuff's all about. And our part in it now is to try and build very high speed, low power circuits for those applications. So we're just, we're in the process of doing that on several fronts. But in the initial stages, we thought we would jump into that bandwagon, but we saw some other opportunities over the years, and we've pursued them strongly as well.
Now, the competition must be awfully tough then in that particular area. How do you keep ahead of the competition in the research?
It really is incredibly competitive worldwide, and we're still in that situation. We've tried to find a few little niche opportunities, and one of them is this medical monitoring, where we're trying to design really low power radios for use with medical devices, wireless devices. The other one is in radio astronomy. We happen to have a unique connection with the National Research Council through the Department of Physics here, and there's a neat project going on that we can discuss in more detail in a minute if you like. And then I happened to get very lucky with some of the personnel that I got into my program. Got a person from Intel who had 7 years of experience designing the Pentium 4 chip, and he's an incredibly clever designer, and he's driving our latest high-speed circuit design.
Can you give me a bit of an inkling of what it might do?
Well, it's really this next-generation idea where basically... let's see if I can put this in a simple way. The cell phone systems and most of the wireless communications devices that you have now have what are called analog front-end circuits. These are circuits that just take the high-frequency signals and process them without digitizing them. What we're developing, and what a lot of other people are doing as well, is developing circuits that will digitize the signals as they come off the antenna. So the whole phone will then be digital rather than analog. And that makes for much more controllable manufacturability. It's programmable then, so you can go to multi-standards. You can move from country to country without having to have a separate phone and so on. So that's really the thrust of what we're trying to do, but it's in competition with a lot of others, of course.
Now let's go back to the astronomy project that you're working on. What's involved with that?
Right. This project is called the SKA, the Square Kilometer Array. It's an international consortium of 17 countries that are trying to build the next generation radio telescope. And the idea is to be able to probe the early origins of the universe to understand the origins, basically. They'll be looking at the birth of the first stars and all those kinds of things. And this telescope is going to be, it'll have a 1 million square meter collector, which is huge. It's about 100 times bigger than anything that exists today. And our part in this is developing the electronics that attach to the antenna elements. The International Committee just announced that two sites have been chosen for the telescope. One is in two possible sites. One's in Australia, the other's in South Africa. The array is huge. It'll be something that would cover a good portion of Canada. There'll be millions of antennas and antenna elements. And so what radio telescopes have traditionally done to date is used very expensive electronics. Some of it has to be cryogenically cooled, that is, you use liquid nitrogen or something like that to cool it, so that the electronics doesn't add noise to the signals. The signals are very faint coming from space, particularly if you want to go way out there. So these electronic components have to be, you know, they have to not add any contamination to those signals, otherwise you won't be able to understand the signals. For the square kilometer array, because there are millions of small antenna elements, it's not practical to use those cooled arrays. There's just no physical way to run it, and it would cost crazy amounts of money. And also the expensive technologies that people are using for the electronics at the moment do not lend themselves to being integrated with other components like CMOS. So you can't do any other signal processing without having separate components, and that is also very expensive when you're talking about millions or tens of millions of elements. So what our program has been is to try and prove that we can use CMOS to replace those expensive electronic components in volume, at low cost, operating at ambient temperature. And just the last month or two, we've been successful in proving that, in fact, you can do that. And we feel at the moment we're leading in this area in terms of low noise CMOS electronics for that application. So it's been pretty exciting.
When do you think this might actually be put into practice?
Oh, it'll be, this is a very long-term project, 15 years probably. They're still in the process of trying to decide the antenna configurations, the site, and so on. So it'll be probably another year or two before those basic decisions are made, and then there's quite a competition amongst countries to see who builds the best electronics, how that will be implemented, who will manufacture it, what the technology will be that's being used, and so on. And of course, as the technology improves, we can do better and better. So they don't want to rush it into production, because in the next 5 years that technology is going to improve dramatically again.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Good talking to you.
That was Dr. Jim Haslett, a professor in the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering at the University of Calgary. He holds the TR Labs ICOR NSERC Senior Industrial Research Chair in Wireless Radio Integrated Circuit Design. The magic of wireless lets you communicate by phone or computer without any obvious connections. But it's a wonder all those chat room conversations, text messages, and downloaded data don't get all jumbled up together. Or maybe they do. Working the snarls out of wireless traffic is one of the jobs that keeps Dr. Carrie Williamson busy. Carrie is a professor in computing science at the University of Calgary, and his research is supported in part by ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence.
I would describe it in a very simple way, that I'm an internet mechanic. If you think the internet is too slow, call me up, because I like to open up the hood, dig in there and see what the problem is, and fix it so the internet runs smoothly and fast for you.
Well, what are some of those problems you're working on then?
Some of the problems we're looking at the University of Calgary are regarding wireless internet. It's a very popular new technology. Many people have used Wi-Fi hotspots at airports, at coffee shops, at the hotels. It's a fabulous technology for access to the internet. But two of the characteristics of wireless technology is that the effective data rate over wireless is much lower than what you'd expect on your desktop machine at work. And secondly, the error rate in wireless transmissions is much higher than you'd expect on the wired internet. Those two problems cause lots of surprises for the internet communication protocols.
So with the work that you're doing, how do you then make everything work faster and better?
So one of the approaches we use is a lot of empirical measurement of existing networks. We can measure a network, whether it's at a company or at a university or a wireless hotspot. We can actually measure the network to understand what the error rates are, what the retransmission rates are, what the users are trying to do on the network, whether it's World Wide Web browsing, whether it's email, whether it's peer-to-peer file sharing. And we can estimate the throughput and the delay and the channel access problems that people are having in the network and redesign the protocols or change the configuration of the network to improve the performance.
Well, perhaps you could give me some examples of particular projects that you're working on.
Okay. There's probably three projects that I'll talk about. One is on multi-radio, multi-channel wireless LANs. As I mentioned before, Wi-Fi hotspots are very prevalent. But one of the characteristics of those hotspots is that all the users in that restaurant or in that hotel are sharing the same transmission bandwidth. So if there's lots of users, you have to live with the delay, the lower throughput, because you're sharing that network resource with everybody else. With multi-radio wireless LANs, you can have an access point that is simultaneously offering multiple physical channels to different users. It's something that's very much commercially feasible with today's technology. And with those multiple channels, you have to carefully schedule so that you load balance your users' traffic demands across the different channels. And you also have to handle handoffs that occur as users move closer to or further from the access point. So those are some of the issues we look at in that first project.
What have you done to resolve it?
The main thing we've done is design a multi-radio, multi-channel wireless LAN that has concentric rings of coverage such that users close to the access point use the highest data rate available, and users furthest from the access point use the lowest data rate available. And that isolates the low data rate users from the high data rate users and improves the overall efficiency of the network.
What else are you working on?
Another project that I'm pretty excited about is a wireless video streaming project where one of my graduate students is trying to think about how do you support wireless video streaming in a room or a building as large as a football stadium, for example. So if you're familiar with the city of Calgary and McMahon Stadium, if you're there watching the Stampeders, well, in person, you miss things like replays and highlights and player interviews that you get at home. So what we want to support in the stadium is live video streaming with different camera angles around the stadium, instant replays of the controversial plays that you could watch on your cell phone, and access to sort of a multimedia experience while you're sitting there in the stadium. There are many technical challenges, as you might imagine, for deploying that, but I think it would really augment the experience for users if we could come up with a solution.
So how far are you along in the route towards getting a solution to this problem?
We have a really nice design for it, which has been evaluated by simulation right now. So we have a computer simulation that says with off-the-shelf technology available today, we could support about 1,500 users at a large sporting event like the World Cup or maybe a football game. We are yet to do the experimental tests with the technology. We've done very small-scale tests with about 8 or 10 users, but we haven't even got it up to 100 users yet.
Now, I can see how this would appeal to the sports junkie or the techno junkie, but what other kinds of applications would there be for this technology once you get it up and running?
I think there's a lot of educational applications, certainly in a university environment for innovative professors who want to use technology in their classroom, who want to allow students to interactively complete quizzes or perhaps collaborate with other students in the classroom on projects. I think there's really nice ways to deploy this technology in what we call portable wireless networks. You can take them wherever you want, work with your friends, work with your students, work with your colleagues using the same technology.
You're also doing some research with the support from TELUS Mobility. What is involved in that?
That's a very interesting project. It's looking at the design of their national cellular network for wireless internet service. Many of the telecommunications companies are rolling out new internet services, whether it's the home security monitoring or the web browsing or file sharing MP3s and so on, ringtones. So we're looking at the implications of those services on the current infrastructure of their national cellular network and planning for the evolution and growth of their network as these services gain in popularity. What's been really interesting is seeing that there's a brand new generation of technology users, namely the high school and teenage audience, that are using their cell phones for internet access in very innovative ways that we had not seen before in our other studies of internet usage.
What's going to be next for you?
For me, I'm very busy this year with a large international conference called the World Wide Web Conference that is consuming a large chunk of my time. It's a chance to showcase Alberta to a large international community of 1,000 people coming here to talk about web technologies. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Thank you very much, Kerry.
Thank you very much, Cheryl.
That was Dr. Kerry Williamson of the University of Calgary. He holds two research chairs. One is the ICOR Chair in Broadband Wireless Networks, Protocols, Applications, and Performance. And his other chair is called the NSERC ICOR TELUS Mobility Industrial Research Chair in Wireless Internet Traffic. Having spent three decades with Natural Resources Canada in Ottawa, Dr. Phil Taye could be moving gracefully towards retirement. Instead, he's launching a new career, and that's as a professor of physics at the University of Lethbridge. Lethbridge is fast gaining an international reputation as an important center for remote sensing research, and the move from Ottawa to Lethbridge gives Phil a chance to expand his expertise in this area.
Well, I was lucky enough to work as a research scientist with Natural Resources Canada for almost 30 years. I had the opportunity to try out a lot of different ideas in the world of satellite imaging of the Earth from space, also known as remote sensing. Canada is very strong in this field. We've been pioneers along with the Americans and some Europeans. And the spearhead the group that spearheads this in Ottawa is the Canada Centre for Remote Sensing, which is part of Natural Resources Canada. And so I guess I had a reasonably sound scientific career such that coming here to the university, it should be a reasonably smooth transition.
Well, you must have done pretty good down there because you just received a gold medal for your work.
Yes, that's true. Thank you. The Canadian Remote Sensing Society, which is our national society for professionals in this line of work, chose to present this to me this past year for productivity over the years. I guess I'm old enough. But I've been very lucky to work with some really good people here and with NASA in the United States and elsewhere.
What makes Canada so strong in remote sensing?
Well, I think it all started with the recognition that we have a very large country with an immensity of resources that we need to understand in order for us to manage and exploit them. And in order to be able to do that, tools such as imaging from space, which gives us synoptic views but still very detailed views, is important. So back in the late 60s and early 70s, the scientists in government realized the importance of this newfangled imaging technology, which we now see everywhere on the internet with Google Maps and Google Earth, and the rest was history. We became second to none in the world in terms of how you use the imaging technology. Other countries, such as the United States, were launching most of the satellites, but we made sure we knew how to use them for our own use.
Now you're here at the University of Lethbridge. How will you be using your background in remote sensing here?
Well, my background particularly concerned the physics aspects of imaging the Earth from space, understanding how the images are calibrated, the effects of the atmosphere, and how different targets and plants and other things of interest reflect sunlight and radar and laser radiation that the satellites and the airborne instruments use. And so the kinds of questions that I will be asking in my research will be a more in-depth continuation of this kind of work in terms of understanding the contents of the images and making sure that the calibration is sound and that the images are useful to the intended communities that use them.
Well, the University of Lethbridge has really set itself up as a center for remote sensing. What all is happening here, and how will you be involved with it?
Well, one of the main factors that drew me to the University of Lethbridge was its strategic plan to take advantage of the strengths it has in what we call in general imaging science. It has a very strong remote sensing program in the Department of Geography. It also has a world-class neuroscience brain imaging group. They do things with MRI on rats and other things, using imaging techniques that we also use in remote sensing. David Naylor in the physics department is also very strong in astronomy, which is another form of imaging science. And some of the colleagues in the physics department also do imaging with nuclear magnetic resonance and other things like that. So altogether, strategically, the university feels that it has strengths and that there will be cross-fertilization of ideas by bringing the different groups involved in imaging together. And that's one of the things I can do to help, because I have a background in physics, astrophysics, and in remote sensing. I the one I'm missing is neuroscience. But 3 out of 4 ain't bad, as they say.
Well, I'm curious about taking this mix between the physics and remote sensing that you do and applying it in the neuroscience area. Do you have any ideas at this time what actually might happen?
Well, we've been tossing some ideas around, and one of the ideas that David Naylor, the astronomer, has is to use some of the techniques they have for acquiring images of the sky at night to possibly improve how the neuroscience people look at the images of the brain for rats in their experiments. And another example would be to use the type of computer image processing techniques that we use in geography and remote sensing in other areas, in astronomy and in neuroscience, and indeed in geophysics, for example. It sounds like an obvious thing to try, but very few people actually go ahead and do it. They talk about it a lot, but I think the University of Lethbridge will be at the forefront in this area.
Thank you very much, Phil.
Okay, it's a pleasure.
That was Dr. Phil Taye, professor of physics at the University of Lethbridge. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our e-newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Research Council, Alberta Conservation Association, Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, Alberta Innovation and Science, Alberta Gaming Research Institute, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, Alberta Ingenuity, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, and the NSERC Industrial Chair in Integrated Landscape Management. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Crocher.